As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
New VanCast to start the week. Jay Pat and Drancer with you. And Thomas, before we get into hockey talk, I got to say congratulations to you because I saw you were able to work a Tyler Myers shift length counter tweet into the Euro final yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. It's just a little joke, right? Like, The thing about it too is like I had some people, and I know our listeners love when I bring up my Twitter mentions, but I had some people be like, interpret it as a shot at Myers, and it's like no, Myers was just the face of a Canucks team that got pinned regularly, you know, like it wasn't, it's not even on him at all. He just had the one shift clock that hit over 3 minutes that people got like really excited about at some point in what, February, or when the Canucks were really not playing that well. And, you know, easy joke to make. It just reminded me of watching some Canucks games this past season, watching how England played Kitty bar the door and not too successfully as it turned out.
No, you know when you know that 90 minutes is a really long time, it's when you score in the second minute and then think that you're just going to be able to defend the rest of the way. So
awful.
Yeah. But this is a hockey pod, not a soccer one, so we shall move on. Couple of things in this week of...
We're coming home to talk about hockey.
Yes, nicely done.
Thank you.
I have a feeling that this is going to be one of those hurry up and wait weeks where like we've talked it to death. And there are things coming at the back end of the week, but, you know, there are people out there that I think are like, where are the buyouts? You guys promised buyouts. And again, buyouts are a last resort. Like, I'm sure there is a ton of talk going on behind the scenes, general managers trying to figure out if there are players that can be poached, if there are players that are available, at what price, what role does Seattle play in all of this? So I have no doubt that the phone lines are burning, but we may be in a bit of a holding pattern for a while still here.
Oh, yeah. I think 100%. And especially with the way that the expansion process works, it's like the rosters freeze at noon on Friday, then 2 hours later the protected lists go in, and then at some point that's Saturday, the 17th,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then at some point on Sunday they're publicized, and then there's days and days that go before the picks are unveiled. You know, and side deals will trickle out as we go, but not a ton of them. There won't be like a ton of news, really. It'll be pretty quiet. And yet this sort of pall will be cast over the NHL as teams are just waiting, as we are, for anything to happen. And then we get to the draft, and I think there will be more fireworks and stuff there. And then we get to qualifying offer. And then it's like a real sprint. But this week... And over the weekend, through the early part of the expansion process, kind of like a false dawn. Like, things are happening. It's just that it's not going to be a heavy torrent of things announced all at once until it's all announced all at once, and then we'll be off and running. But that's sort of more of a next week thing than a this week thing. Unless that is, of course, the Canucks get out ahead of it and manage to make a deal, which they really, really should be able to do before the rosters freeze. Like in a normal league, the 17th would function as like a mini summer trade deadline. I don't think we're going to see that level of action, that level of activity league-wide, but we really should. And certainly the Canucks should be among the teams most inclined to push to get something done this week before their hands are artificially tied by the expansion process.
Speaking of Seattle, we found out a couple of key dates in the fall. We know the Canucks and the Kraken are going to meet in the preseason at the very least. September 26th, the first meeting of these teams, first ever meeting of these teams, it's going to take place in Spokane. And then October 5th at Rogers Arena. Now, I thought it was interesting that Seattle's moving the preseason around. They're going to play games in three Western Hockey League arenas in Kent, home of the Seattle Thunderbirds, Everett, the Everett Silvertips, and that one against the Canucks, September 26th, in Spokane, which is home to the Chiefs, of course. Now, I saw Jeff Baker, who writes sports for the Seattle Times, suggesting that beyond this three-game tour of the state of Washington, that the Kraken are likely to start with at least three games on the road, which tells you that maybe, just maybe, it is getting down to crunch time as far as that building, Climate Pledge Arena, is concerned in terms of it being fully ready to host National Hockey League games.
Yeah, interesting. That's an interesting note. And, you know, I would expect, and I think there is going to be an appetite, not just, I mean, we've seen this offseason, obviously, the Canucks are, and the Oilers and the Flames are going to be rolling around and playing in other locales as well. But I do think there's going to be an appetite down the line. And, you know, I believe conversations have already happened on this order about, you know, playing like a pretty regular home and home where neither game takes place in Vancouver or Seattle, right? I mean, you can engage the wider hockey community. And as we know, the Pacific Northwest is a relatively vibrant junior hockey market. So there are options to play Seattle, Vancouver in the preseason, all around British Columbia, you know, and all around Washington State. I think we're seeing getting a taste of that, but I'd expect, you know, that to be something that we see pretty regularly going forward. Maybe we'll even get a game in Kamloops, the Jeff Patterson Bowl. That'd be good fun. So, you know, we'll sort of see where this runs, but yeah, very interesting if their arena's not ready. A lot of pressure to get that renovation done. It's certainly a complicated one.
Rink in Spokane is terrific. I haven't been there in 20-some years, but it was brand new when I was working in the Western Hockey League. And, you know, it's kind of cool that you think of Travis Green from Castlegar, people in the Kootenays. It's unlikely that the Canucks are going to take a preseason game to the Kootenays. So this is about as close. I mean, I guess people in the Kootenays can go to Calgary and Edmonton for NHL if they wanted, or they can come to Vancouver. But I would imagine that you'd see if the borders are in fact open by then, and let's hope that they are, that you will get people from the Kootenays that will head down to see the Vancouver Canucks play that game in Spokane. The other thing, you know, it's funny, like, and I like this because Seattle's only playing six preseason games. Like when we last saw the Vancouver Canucks in a preseason, remember their last training camp, full training camp, was Victoria ahead of that 2019-2020 season. And they played that game in Victoria that night. It was split squad against the Flames, and there was a game in Calgary that same night. But the Canucks for a while have done eight preseason games, which I just think is way too many. I just think you go to training camps now, coaches, for the most part, have a pretty good sense of what their depth chart looks like. You know, a guy like Adam Gaudette played his way onto the team out of training camp that year, and they kept playing. Remember, they played, I think he played six or seven of the preseason games, and they just kept giving him ice time, and he responded to it, and he had a really nice camp and a really good preseason. But like, I'd love to see the league cap preseason at six games. Like, to me, six is the perfect amount.
Well, I agree with you, first of all, J-Pat, and I think the NHL does too. I think there's a reason that they're moving with some flexibility to return to a normal schedule to a truncated regular season. And look, there's a lot going on in terms of trying to reset and get back on their normal cycle, right? But I also think the reason that teams have had so many preseason games typically is that you include preseason tickets at full price in season ticket member deals, right? So you're, I mean, it's basically extra inventory the teams can sell. The players don't get paid yet either, right? Like, preseason is a racket, and it's where teams can rack up huge margins, huge margins. So that's why teams have traditionally liked it. Now, I think as we come out of the other end of this pandemic and teams and leagues look to rebuild consumer habits of coming out to the game, especially among season ticket members, some of whom never withdrew their deposits while going years between being able to attend, as is their routine, home dates for their favorite team. You know, I think there's an increasing understanding that fans don't really love that. You know, even dedicated season ticket members don't love paying full price for four extra preseason. Like, woo. So, you know, I wonder if we're going to see this be a more permanent fixture. Shorter training camps, fewer preseason games, and I think we will. All of that said, rosters are more or less set these days at training camp. But if there's one team that seems to give us a training camp surprise almost every single year, it's this one. Like, this team does care about training camp, whether it was Gaudette at training camp in Victoria, whether it was Niels Hoglander last year, on and on. Zach McEwen before the bubble, at bubble training camp. Like, there's always a surprise. This team, this organization in particular, does seem to weight training camp performance on off, like, much more heavily than your average club, which is why it always sort of amuses me every time we get into training camp and start doing, like, you know, scrimmage talking points. And everyone's, it's a scrimmage. It's like, it matters. It matters. It's going to impact who's on the roster. So we should make a big deal out of it. Anyway, that's just a side note. But I think you're dead on. And I think the NHL business model as a whole is moving toward that direction. I think we're seeing that in practice this fall.
I'm glad you brought up the summer training camp, because this sort of blew my mind when
I was...
It was a year ago today.
I know. I thought about this yesterday, too.
They have completed two Stanley Cup cycles.
Do you remember how weird it felt to walk into a rink?
Completely.
To just, like, have somewhere to go?
It was a gorgeous day.
Beautiful, yeah.
And remember where we were in the pandemic at that point? Like, remember we had to get, like, the temperature gun to your head, right?
Oh, yeah.
You had to fill out the form to get into the building. And really, that was our first time dealing in Zoom. Like, you know, up until that point, remember, like, they had altered the way that we had access and things, and then COVID shut everything down. But that was really the first time that we dealt with players post-practice on Zoom on the regular. So, yeah, like, it just, to me, you know, it feels like a lifetime ago, and yet we've awarded the Stanley Cup twice in the National Hockey League since this day last year, the start of summer training camp. It's crazy.
Well, I mean, it is crazy. A couple, like, just weird memories from that day. First of all, I remember getting there relatively early. You were, of course, there relatively early, being the most punctual person on the Canucks beat, as you are. And Kuz was there early, which is a little... I guess Kuz is pretty punctual, too, right? You and Kuz are old Kamloops news guys, hockey news guys, so it makes sense. But I just remember the, like, start of school vibes. You know, like, yeah. I've never been so happy to see all my colleagues.
Totally.
Like, it was, like, such a buoyant conversational atmosphere. And then I remember, too, and this is, like, such a weird thing to think of, but, like, I'd worn masks into stores or, like, in and out of my house and my apartment complex. Like, I'd worn masks occasionally, but I'd never sat in a rink and hung out for, like, hours with a mask on until that day. And I just remember being like, my ears hurt. Like, oh, my ears. Oh, my gentle little ears, they're hurting. And I remember I got home afterwards. Like, no, I want to be clear. I didn't actually, like, complain to anybody. But I just remember I got home and I was, like, rubbing my ears. And I'm like, owsies. My poor ears. And now, like, I can wear, you know, a mask all day. Like, no problem. Like, it's something I'm so used to now. But at the time, I wasn't. It was such an unfamiliar thing. And then the other thing is, it was also this moment where, like, now, when we go in to do a Zoom availability, we get one player, right? Or two players and a coach. And it's over. And there, Zoom was so new that we were still getting, like, a commensurate level of availability to what we normally would have got, like, 5-6 guys.
Right. They just kept rolling them out.
They kept rolling them out. And I remember I'd have these audio files that were, like... 120 minutes long. And I was just like, what am I going to fucking do with this? Jesus. It was a totally new totally brave new world for everybody, including the Canucks. So those are my three like distinct takeaways from that year ago. But man, awful lot has happened. I thought about this at length yesterday, and I thought about it especially while writing the piece. But it was like the piece that I wrote today, just the off-season primer. That like it's been a year, but the Canucks feel like they exist in a totally different world in terms of the state of their rebuild and what comes next and how do they go up from here and what challenges are they facing? Like, you know, so much has happened to this organization in particular over the course of that season and a playoff run, including them having a ton of success in the bubble, by the way, right?
Yeah.
Just what an absolute roller coaster it's been for the Canucks in particular over the course of the 12 months that have transpired since we got back into Rogers Arena.
They had 34 players at that camp. Remember, Sven Berchi was a late withdrawal. He decided not to take part, and then they had to summon Cole Lind, and he came in hot. He arrived there. Just looking at like the roster year over year in the last 12 months, Gaudette, Toffoli, Tanev, Stetcher, Ben, Fantenberg, Markstrom, and Domingue were all invites to that summer camp. And of course, none of those guys are around. And Jordy Benn was on baby watch, right? Remember, he showed up
remember.
And then he left and rejoined the team in the bubble. So, yeah, a lot has gone on in 1 year since summer training camp 2020 ahead of bubble hockey last year in the playoffs. The guys at Evolving Wild have conducted their Seattle expansion draft. And it's based on analytics. And I want to get into that in a sec because I thought there were some interesting takeaways from the players that they have going to the Kraken.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, we're going to see more of this mock draft, Seattle drafts, in the days and weeks ahead until we get to the Kraken actually making their selections. But I thought this was interesting. Again, you can find it online. Evolving Wild did their expansion draft, and they've got Seattle taking Braden Holtby from the Canucks, along with Jake Allen and Aiden Hill. Those are the goaltenders. Now, up front, your man, Mason Appleton, no surprise.
Yeah.
Yanni Gourde, Anthony DeClaire, Nick Cousins, Jonas Donskoy, Warren Fogle, and Ryan Donato among the selections that they've got the Kraken making. And then check out this defense core. They got Matt Dumba, Vince Dunn, Travis Dermott, Nick Jensen from the Capitals, Mike Matheson, Mark Giordano, and Kevin Shattenkirk.
Not bad.
It isn't bad. Like when
they built a playoff team.
When you look at that defense core.
Yeah,
like we're talking about the Canucks and all the pieces that they're trying to put together to assemble a defense core. And right there, Dumba, Dunn, Dermott, Jensen, Matheson, Giordano, Shattenkirk. There were others, but those were the names that jumped off the page at me. But you think that's a playoff team?
No, yeah, in the Pacific, for sure, for sure. That's a good team. Yan Gord's really good. Mason Appleton's really good.
Like it's like they've been listening to the VanCast and reading
there's mileage there.
Yeah,
well, or that we share something of a hive mind, except on goalies. Woof! Good God, who'd they take from the Islanders?
Kiefer Bellows.
Yeah, see, that's where I think they get their goalie. Like, why is Seattle not going to take Varlamov? Because he's going to be exposed.
Yeah, I don't know their reasoning.
Well, they probably didn't have him exposed. They probably were like, why would they not protect?
Fair enough.
You know what I mean? Like, they probably just don't assume that the Islanders are going to do something like that. But of course they are. Like, they have to sign Sorokin. They have to sign Adam Pellick. Both of those players, like, starred, right? Like, those are not depth guys. Tito Beauvillier, he's also up. Like, man, those three are going to take up a ton of money, and they're basically at the cap right now. Like, the Islanders have to figure out how to shed salary, whether it's Eberle or Varlamov. Like, that's who the Islanders need to get the Kraken to take those guys. I just don't see them. I don't see the Kraken taking Kiefer Bellows with all of that considered, right? Like, they're going to have better options out of the island because the Islanders are going to need to shed salary. Jan Gord, I think the Lightning will find a way to protect Jan Gord somehow. Somehow, I think they'll find a way to push the Kraken toward a different player. Taking Travis Dermott in a world where the Leafs go 4-4, right? Protection structure. Like, where else are you finding centermen? Centermen are going to be at a huge premium in this expansion process. I think Kerfoot's much more likely to go. So, not that I think their thought process is wrong, as any of our regular listeners can tell. The Evolving Wild people have basically come up with, like, a list of Drant's favorites, right? And I really admire the team they've drafted. But I just don't quite see it playing out that way. Not for player evaluation reasons, but because of the actual leverage points and incentives and what various teams are going to be trying to accomplish, including the Kraken, when the process actually hits. But fascinating. Like, it's really fun to see different versions of it, especially versions that are compiled using a particular slant, like a particular idea of how to approach this. And especially interesting with the Evolving Hockey guys, because I do expect this Kraken front office, under Ron Francis's leadership, to take a relatively progressive approach overall.
Right. And I think that's sort of, to me, that's where my mind went was, we know that the Kraken have built out this massive front office. We know that they've been leaning into analytics really since day one. And so I do wonder if there is something instructive in the way that this expansion draft, this mock draft, took place. You know, a couple of things that jumped off the page at me was the age of their forward group. Like, you know, Gord's 29, but Duclair at 25, Appleton 25, Cousins is 27, Fogle at 25, Donato 25, Kiefer Bellows 23. Like, you know, they're not. Richard Panik is on the list. They've got Panik from Detroit at he's 30.
I like that. That's a good pick.
You know, but he's the only 30-year-old forward that they've got in the entire bunch. Obviously, Giordano at 37 is the old man in the group, and Braden Holtby is going to be 32 here in the coming season. But you know, for the most part, they've gone with a relatively young group, and I wonder too if that is partly to get guys that, you know, then you can turn around and flip, like grab some players that other teams might be, you know, might have interest in, rather than loading up on veterans if you thought that that was the way to go to try to, you know, make some sort of statement in the first year. Whatever the case, this group looks like guys that are primarily in that sort of 24 to 26-year-old range, and we'll see what kind of flexibility that gives the Kraken once they go through the exercise of the expansion draft itself.
And that's what happened to Vegas. They had all prime age players, right? There was no old guys, no young guys. It was like all 24 to 28-year-old guys. And I think that was an under sort of reported reason that they had so much success. It was like no old guys, but a lot of guys who are pros, like true and true pros, have been around, are men in the league. I wouldn't be shocked at all if Seattle approaches things similarly. I also will be completely unsurprised if the Kraken don't find ways to take, you know, guys who aren't the best player available to them, right, in order to stockpile assets and on and on, just as Vegas did. So anyway, a really interesting list, a really interesting exercise. I do think things are going to look a little bit differently. And the Holtby thing is interesting to me. I saw Jeff Baker, who's now come up twice. We should have him as a guest.
Yeah.
You know, I saw him talk about the possibility of Holtby as well. Which, you know, Baker's one of those, you know, he covers sports, but he's not a sports reporter. He's like a reporter who covers sports, right?
Right.
So, yep. I mean, I've read him enough that I always suspect there's more going on when he writes something.
You think there's a tell? There's a tell there?
Not a tell, but certainly something that makes me wonder if, you know, they'd be interested in actually doing that. I think I'd be a little surprised. Like, guys like Daniel Vladar out of Boston, who are 23... You know, guys like who's the Washington goalie that Jerebatchik or whatever. There's no way I'm going to pronounce his name right. Vitaly Vanacek. did pronounce his name.
I think
right.
He did. Yeah.
Yeah. Vitaly Vanacek, you know, he's an option too. They could sign Freddie Anderson. You know, Josh Allen seems like, or Jake Allen seems like a no brainer. You know, one of Casey DeSmith or Tristan Jarry will be left unprotected. Like, there are going to be pretty decent options available to this team. And I'm curious. I also do still think Varlamov probably ends up getting exposed. So, you know, when you go through the list, like, I just think that there's going to be enough depth in net. One of Cam Talbot or Kaapo Kähkönen is going to be exposed. But yeah, I think there's going to be enough depth of talent in net and guys at more affordable price points that I'll be a little bit surprised if, well, not a little bit surprised. I think I'll be very surprised in the event that the Kraken take Holtby without, you know, the Canucks inducing them to do so by parting with some additional asset.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm not sure what to make of this. I guess nobody should really be surprised, but Elliot Friedman sort of closed the book on the hockey season with his final version of 31 thoughts. I think there were actually 33, and I would imagine next year with Seattle on board, there'll be 32 on the regular.
Like false advertising for each.
But he had one. I can't remember which one it was. But he said the Canucks are looking for heft, Tom.
Yeah, I mean. I saw some reaction to this that's like the meat and potatoes and on and on. But I mean, no one's surprised by this, right? Like I think the key is to not to get bogged down in the idea that they're chasing size so much as they're chasing players who can do some of that like heavy press grunt work, right? Like this team needs some stoppers, right? Like they need some stoppers on defense. They need some guys who can penalty kill. They need a center who can penalty kill, right? They need guys who can help them as a two-way team. So, you know, I wasn't surprised by this at all. And actually, as I thought about it, I thought, you know, what's really the difference between everything that I've been saying about getting defenders with defensive IQ, right? Like two-way IQ. And heft, like it's different acronyms for the same thing, or different acronyms, different words for the same thing. So, you know, I wouldn't, my reaction was a little bit different than everyone else's, I think, or at least the popular reaction on Canucks Twitter. I just thought of it, I saw it and thought, yeah, for sure. I mean, obviously, that's exactly what they need. They need, you know, competitive, workmanlike, capable players, and they need like four of them. I mean, it's not easy to find.
I suppose, though, you know, this comes in the same week that the Montreal Canadiens get to the Stanley Cup final with, you know, their big four on defense. And we do know that Jim Benning has a pension. He likes big defensemen. Like, he has chased those since he got here, whether it was Lucas Pisa or Erik Gudbranson, Tyler Myers, obviously. You know, there is a bit of a history as far as the kind of defenseman that he has chased. And so I started playing around on Cap Friendly and searching UFA defenseman over 6'2" and 200, a minimum of 200 pounds. And six of the top 20 have been Canucks in Jim Benning's time here. Edler, Gudbranson, Hamonic, Hutton, Spezza, and Luke Shen. Those are the six. And again, the six of 20 that pop up with those parameters. 6'2" and a minimum of 200 pounds. So, you know, Edler's still very much on the radar. We hear that repeatedly. I can't imagine that they'd go back down Gudbranson Boulevard. The page has to be turned on most of those guys. But again, it just Jim's got a penchant. He likes his big defensemen. And you do wonder, based on Montreal's success, if, you know, there's any correlation in terms of the approach that they're going to take here.
Well, I mean, again, I have no problem with chasing big defensemen. There are some big defenseman targets available in free agency that I really like. Like, I really like Jamie Oleksiak, and he's as big as it gets. I really like Yanni Hackenpay. That's my dude. That's like the guy I've been riding for.
Do you like saying his name?
I don't, not really. but you know, so it goes. I think he's a really good player. Who doesn't like big defensemen? Everyone likes big defensemen. You should like big defensemen.
But they have to be able to play, Tom.
They have to be able to do more than be big. They can't just, you're not selling jeans. But yeah, I mean, it's, but yeah, look, the Canucks do need, I think, some really smart, capable two-way players. I think they believe that, you know, bigger defensemen do a better job defending in the areas they want to do, or they want to defend, they want to protect. Yeah, so I mean, I won't be shocked by it, but again, you're right. The key is the right player at the right price point. Like, even Jamie Oleksiak, I think, is going to be so highly courted because of his size, because of his ability to play with skilled defenders and on, because he can contribute, get up in the rush. His hands aren't, you know, negligible. He's not Eric DeBranson, right? You know, and at some point you don't really have five to spend on a defenseman, and you definitely don't have five to spend on Jamie Oleksiak. And this, more than anything, I think is, well, this sort of segues into one thing that I think is tough. Like, one thing that I think is a underrated feature about the Tampa Bay Lightning, right? Everyone talks about Coleman and Gaudreau bringing this heft to the Lightning when they were acquired, right? But the key to Gaudreau and Coleman working out, as important as, you know, their ability to play as heavy presses and the fact that they combined with Yan Gord on a really good matchup line and on, is the fact that they were players at the right stage of their careers vis-a-vis the cap, right? Like, they combined for what? 2.8, just over 2.8 in actual cap hit. Like, that is what makes that work, is that you can graft those two players. I see Coleman as a top line talent. I see Gaudreau as a middle six talent. You know, you can graft them into a lineup that's, you know, loaded, and they fit, and that's everything. Like, that's the whole ballgame. And one thing that I often think about with a downfall of the Benning era is, so often they've acquired good players after the window for them to be really helpful. Like, you want guys like Michael Ferland and Antoine Roussel and Derek Dorsett, but you want them on the contract before they came to Vancouver. You know, like, you want them at a slightly earlier stage of their development. Now, it's really hard to find those players, obviously. They're really expensive. But as the Lightning showed, the thing to pay a premium for is not the right guy. It's the right guy at the right time. And as the Canucks look for size on the back end, like, if they can get the right guy, it might be worth paying that premium. But pretending to do it, you know, or identifying the right player type but the wrong guy, as they did with Eric Goodbranson, whom they paid a premium for, or Brandon Sutter, whom they paid a premium for, kills you. That to me is the test. Like, the Canucks need to find a bunch of guys who are at the right stage of their careers, i.e. affordable, relatively cost controlled for at least a couple more years, certainly through next season when they have a chance to really get good really fast. That's the task of this offseason, the fundamental one. And I do think if they're, you know, are these players who happen to have heft? For me, they are, which is why I didn't have the same reaction as a lot of other folks when I read that passage. Do I understand, however, why people are like, this team can't afford to get bogged down in a search for size? They need to be focused on just doing the best they can with the limited cap space available to them. Although, fuck, if Seattle takes Holtby, that's a big game changer for the Canucks. I mean, yes, I understand that completely, because we've seen the same movie over and over again in this market.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. A lot of people getting hung up on the word heft, because, like, I think you could make a case. No, it is underused probably in the grand scheme, but I think you could make a pretty strong case that Nils Höglander played with heft. He was the smallest forward on their roster, but he played with heft.
Totally.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, people are getting bogged down in this, you know, they're going searching for giants. And they have in the past, and maybe they will again, but I think heft can come in different shapes and sizes. And as you say, it's more about the way that you play the game. You've written a primer here for the weeks ahead. It's up at The Athletic now. It sort of covers all the aspects of, you know, the events, whether it's the expansion draft, the draft itself, free agency, the money involved, all up there. Anything else that you care to add about the piece that has been posted?
Well, honestly, the piece is mostly designed for as a catch-up for those who maybe tuned out and enjoyed the weather in May and June. You know, this is like, we've done a ton of prep work at The Athletic, right? Like a ton of prep work prior to the offseason. We're getting into the meat of it. We've got some really good content coming this week. Before we get into all of that, I thought it would be helpful to just catch everybody up. Here's what's going on. And here's where the Canucks are positioned. Here's a one-stop shop with everything you need to know about the draft and expansion and where the Canucks stand, their off-season needs, who are options to fill those needs, on and on down the list. That's what it's designed to do. Just a way to kick off the week and remind everyone of the stakes and the key factors that will shape this Canucks off-season. So no, not a ton more to add, but a fun read anyway, and a quick one to get, you know, to do the brain download on everything Canucks before a week that, as we said, you know, is relatively high leverage and could be really interesting, but also could be pretty dull. And we'll see where that goes.
Yeah, let's hope it slides to the interesting side. Yeah. We've had enough.
Oh, yeah, we need a move. Like, and the Canucks exactly. Need a move. They need to do. Totally. They need to take advantage of this. Like, they need to make a trade before the 17th. I think it's a really crucial. Like, I honestly think there's almost no higher leverage moment in this offseason. Then whether the Canucks can avail themselves of this unique opportunity. It's one we've been eyeing for more than a year. More than a year was when I realized the Canucks, I wrote that piece of The Athletic in May of last year that was like, the Canucks are going to be positioned to add a defenseman specifically. I thought they'd have enough depth up front that maybe they wouldn't have an additional forward slot. As it turns out, they probably have two additional forward slots and one on defense. And I'm actually more expectant to see them at a forward than a defender. But for more than a year, it's been evident to the entire hockey world and to the Canucks themselves, who've discussed this publicly on several occasions. Their hockey operations leadership group has. You've got to add, considering who they're projected to protect at the moment. With you know, names like Olli Juolevi and Tyler Myers and Matthew Highmore and Tyler Mott. All players who are, you know, well below the average player that'll be protected by other teams.
All right, VIPs, you got your homework. You have to read Tom's refresher to set you up for the weeks ahead. Arizona Coyotes head coach Andre Tournier and former NHL GM Dean Lombardi are joining Pierre LeBrun and Scott Burnside on the two-man advantage edition of The Athletic Hockey Show this week. So you have other pod options to look forward to. And we always finish up by telling you, check out our comment section for every podcast episode that we record. You can do that at The Athletic app. Rate and subscribe to The VanCast on Apple. And if you're not already a subscriber, go to theathletic.com/VanCast and receive a subscription for just $3.99 per month. All right, let the fun begin. We'll keep our fingers crossed that, in fact, it does begin at some
it
point
is fun.
Here. Yes, exactly. All right, we'll leave it at that. And again, we'll be here three times a week for the remainder of the month as things start to percolate around the hockey world. For Grant, it's J-Pat. As always, thanks for listening to another edition of the VanCast here at The Athletic and theathletic.com.